Today's episode is brought to you by 5-4 Club. Oh yeah, baby. You've heard of them. I know you have. You know why? Because they dress people like Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Zac Efron, Aziz Ansari, Don Cheadle, and Adam Ray. Yeah, well, let me tell you how I got to learn about 5-4 Club. I'm a dude who doesn't have time to shop, okay? I don't really like to shop. And what I do like are people who know clothes, who know style, and want to help people like me out, okay? When you sign up to be a member of 5-4 Club for $60 a month, only $60 a month, here's what you get, okay? You get proven style, recommendations, and advice from top stylists who just want to make you look good and educate you on how to wear certain pieces. They're not trying to make your wardrobe for you. They just want to help educate you on how to create your vibe, your style. It's an easy sign-up process, all right? You go in, you personalize your style preferences, create a profile, and whether you're looking for clothes for the office, the club, just a chill weekend or whatever, 5-4 has you covered. There are four style profiles, okay? Classic, casual, forward, and mix. You create these, and the guys put together a box of dope clothes for you and send it to your place, to your doorstep, direct delivery, free shipping. Free shipping. So few businesses do that, all right? Go to 5-4 Club right now. Sign up. Become a member. It's only $60 a month, okay? The only way to get this brand is to be a member, all right? You can't find 5-4 Club anywhere else, so you got to sign up, baby. Do you want to stand out in the crowd and not blend in like everyone else? Do you want to wear the clothes that Don Cheadle and Blake Griffin wear? Do you want to start getting compliments from girls you didn't think were even looking at you? I'm telling you, Brad even wears this shit, all right? They've got his size. They've got little Brad's size. I can't stress how dope this company is. I wear their shit. It's dependable. It's reliable. They throw you how-to-wear style suggestions, curated collections, selected by personal stylists. You're not a stylist, man. Get some help from dudes that know what they're talking about. Free size exchanges, free delivery, and easy style profile edits. Great styles that are on point and on season. You want shorts and a button-up? Cool. They got them. You want jackets and jeans when it gets colder? They got them. Go to 54club.com right now. Use promo code ALN to get a nice little discount off your first package, all right? Also, if you sign up for 54 Club this month, they've teamed up with Robert Geller. You know who Robert Geller is? Yeah, maybe named Best Men's Wear Designer in 2009. He's collaborated with Levi's, Common Projects, Yeezy Season 1. Robert Geller is thrown in a pair of his $200 shades for free when you sign up this month to be a member in 5-4 Club. All right? So go to 54club.com, use promo code ALN, and start looking better, baby. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Oh, baby. Got a great episode today. Really pumped about this one. You guys might recognize this dude from MTV's Jerks with Cameras or MTV's Disaster Date or 21 Jump Street. And March 31st on CBS, you will definitely recognize him after this juggernaut of a show. He's starring in the new CBS one-hour drama comedy, Rush Hour. That's right, based on the movie with Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan, our guest today is the Chris Tucker, role in the TV adaptation. And our friend who's starring in the show and is our guest today on the About Last Night podcast is the one and only Justin Hires. You know, I met Justin at the Ha Ha Comedy Club about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And he's one of those guys that just every time we see each other at clubs, we just high five, we smile, we shoot the shit. Just a good dude. But this was definitely the longest we'd talked outside of a comedy club, maybe in general. Seen him in auditions, not for the same part, obviously. He being the funny, loudmouth black dude, and me being the, tall, obnoxious, fratty white dude. Not going for the same parts. But seeing him at auditions, always crushes it, always brings it on stage. His stand-up is great. If you see him in your city, go see him. Look up his YouTube videos on YouTube. And, of course, watch him in Rush Hour, March 31st on CBS. This interview was great. We get into so much stuff, his MTV VJ days, how impressions helped him get a start in comedy, especially in elementary school doing Bill Cosby impressions, and then his story of getting the Rush Hour show and the rigorous filming days is pretty fucking eye-opening as far as an insight into the business that a lot of us comics especially just don't know about because we're not on dramas. Anyway, this episode's great. You're going to love it. And get to know Justin Hires now, because the motherfucker is going to blow up. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin Hires. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. And go see Brad in Cleveland, Ohio tonight through March 13th. March 10th through the 13th. Brad's at the Cleveland Improv in Cleveland, Ohio. Get your tickets at improv.com and go see Brad in Cleveland, Ohio at the Improv. And then go see Brad March 17th. Through the 18th, just two nights, in Columbia, Missouri at Deja Vu Comedy Club. Brad Williams, Deja Vu Comedy Club, Columbia, Missouri. I will be performing in Los Angeles for the next 2.5 weeks, baby. A lot of L.A. dates, Comedy Store Improv, Laugh Factory, the Electric Lodge in Venice, the Irvine Improv. I will be headlining Irvine Improv in Irvine, California, March 15th at 8 p.m. Come see me there at Irvine. All my tour dates at AdamRayTV.com. But I will be headlining coming up April 1st and 2nd at the La Jolla Comedy Store in San Diego, California. Get your tickets at ComedyStore.com and come see me, San Diego. I'm bringing my boy Avery Pearson. We're going to do some music. We're going to do some stand-up. It's going to be a different, fun show. Come be a part of that. La Jolla Comedy Store, April 1st and 2nd in San Diego. And then, of course, end of April, I'll be at Laugh Boston in Boston, Massachusetts. First time there, April 28th through the 30th. Laugh Boston, Boston, Massachusetts, and right after that at the Arlington Draft House, May 5th through the 7th, baby, in Arlington, Virginia. Super pumped. Been there before. Always a great time. Arlington, Virginia, the Arlington Draft House, Adam Ray, May 5th through the 7th. Bunch more dates are going to be added thanks to the premiere of my TBS show, Separation Anxiety, which premiered on Tuesday. And it did great, man. I'm so pumped. So many of you watched it. All your Facebook messages, your emails, your tweets. It was really, really pretty cool to get all that support. I'm very proud of the show. It was super fun to make. Eliza crushed it. The whole crew, 5x5, the production company that created the show, and everyone involved, the writers, the PAs, the producers, the guys who came up with the game show questions. It was a solid team effort. I'm super pumped and proud of it. TBS loves it, and hopefully we get another season. And, you know, it's a unique twist on a game show that you haven't seen before. And people have been really digging it, and I hope they continue to. Check it out Tuesday nights, 10 p.m., TBS, Separation Anxiety. Set your DVR right now. Of course, all the ALN merch is available at estoymerchandise.com, estoymerchandise.com. Do you have your ALN shirts or mugs or hats or posters? Because we got all of it at estoymerchandise.com. Commemorative ALN posters with a ton of our amazing guests. All in one poster. Ronnie and the Quave shirts, Titanic shirts, Life My Life shirts, hats, mugs. Got a lot of cool stuff. Go check it out. EstoyMerchandise.com. Get your ALN merch. Bring it to the shows. We'll sign it for you. So many more great episodes coming up. Our schedule for the next few weeks is jam-packed with more amazing guests. We've had a really solid run here with Divine, Beck Bennett, Dave Attell, and now Justin Hires today. But, man, just so many great interviews coming up. And one in particular, I think I tweeted this out, but I did the Howard Stern wrap-up show in New York last weekend. And, man, ended up meeting Johnny Resnick, lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls, in the lobby at Sirius Radio. Went up and approached him, again, using the school of you don't ask, you don't get, which I, you know, picked up from my mom, Puddin'. And I went up and just asked, hey, man, I do this podcast, blah, blah, blah. We've had this person on. We'd love to have you on and promote your new album that he told me he was doing in a conversation we had previous. We had this conversation. I went into the elevator, and then I was just like, God, I should go ask him to do the podcast. My buddy Adam French was with me. We were attending a wedding for a friend of ours in upstate New York the next day. And I'm getting, I go, God, I should go ask him to do the podcast, huh? He goes, yeah, why not? I was like, that's all I needed to hear. Adam French is one of my best friends of all time. Also a great yes-ander, and, you know, a great peer pressurer, too. I mean, he's the reason that I think I tried to jump off of a balcony sophomore year of high school to Third Eye Blind's Jumper because I got too drunk, you know? I think I was, like, 12 shots in at 17, and he was like, have another shot. I was like, no. And he goes, come on. And I was like, okay. I didn't look at it like that. That's a great idea. But he convinced me to go talk to Johnny Resnick, and the Goo Goo Dolls are going to be on the podcast. That's what I'm trying to say. So look forward to that episode and many more. And, of course, get all the episodes at aboutlastnightpodcast.com. Subscribe on iTunes so you can get new episodes every Monday. And Thursday, as we've been doing the last few weeks, we're going to try to get two episodes going a week to give you guys more content because you've been wanting it and we've been wanting to give it to you. That sounded creepy. That's all the merch info. Those are the tour dates. Those are the Twitter handles. Separation Anxiety airs 10 p.m. Tuesday nights on TBS with me and Eliza Schlesinger. DVR it, watch it. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the hilarious Justin Hires.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
You're the Jackie Robinson of YouTube. You're the first black guy.
I'm not the, maybe the Willie Mays.
So like it's like you and that chocolate rain guy.
Yeah.
Or is he even black? I don't know. I'm white. I'm racist.
When I got dark. Hey, we all something. I was gonna say when I first got on YouTube, it was like 2008 maybe.
Yeah,
yeah. Because YouTube popped in 2005?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I remember being in college when my friend first told me about it. And the only black people I saw on YouTube that were comedians were Donald Glover and Afion Crockett.
Yeah.
And then me. And so I had like videos go viral like super early. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped doing them because I wanted to focus on my stand-up and acting.
Yeah.
So I stopped doing them for like 2 years. And then I saw Spoken Reasons.
Yeah.
From the Heat.
Yeah.
That you did a movie with. And I saw he had booked The Heat basically from YouTube.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to get back on my social media game. So I got back on YouTube, went viral again because I'm that nigga. And then,
if you tell the sitcom that,
yeah,
I was just gonna say,
person would be like, hey, so what shows are you watching? You know, I've been watching that sitcom. Which one? You know,
it's the one with the black family. It's on
Gerard Show.
No, that's the other one. Blackish? No, it's not quite.
I'm that nigga. I'm that.
Oh, I want to sing that theme song so bad.
Like you want to, but you also want to be able to walk and not feel in danger as you're walking down the street. So
have you had? White friends. I had this conversation with a black friend on the other day about the exception for white people to ever say it. And I go, I don't think there is an exception.
Mm-hmm. I think you're correct.
Yeah.
I used to have a joke about if you hang around white people long enough, they will say the N-word.
So funny.
It's a matter of time.
It's just a matter. It's like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. You know? So like they have the doomsday clock. And like, so for white people, it's just like countdown to N-word.
Countdown to N-word.
Yeah, it's like, well, he's at 30 seconds, but the clock has stalled. Wait, Nelly just released another album? Here we go.
Because I was saying how, I wonder I stopped doing that joke. I just started back doing stand-up because I was going for 6 months shooting the show.
Dude, I was telling, well, we'll get into that in a minute, yeah.
But before I stopped to shoot the show, I was working on a joke about how basically I was doing another show, and the white guy on the show, he kept finding clever ways to use the N-word around me. He was like, oh, I just hate it when people say nigger. Oh! Just boil my grits. Boils my grits when people say nigger. Oh, God damn it. I would never say nigger, Justin. Never. That is not in me. You know, that's taught in the home. Do you know that? It's taught in the home.
Wow. See, that he's doing what Trump's doing right now, where he's like, I would never say that Jeb Bush sucks dick.
Yeah.
I would never put
that
out there.
I would never say that.
That's a good Trump.
That's all right. But you basically have to just focus on keywords like huge.
Huge.
Yeah. I would never say that Hillary Clinton was once in a gangbang in South Central Los Angeles. You just make sure that someone else says the bad thing, and then that gives you carte blanche? No.
Wait, I want to know, what were the videos you did on YouTube that went viral? Because you do a lot of impressions and characters, right? Like, that's kind of...
I do. It's crazy. Yeah, I do.
But what were the first things you started putting out that you were like, all right, I'm going to... Like, I think this is funny, because YouTube, for me, like, I was doing some sketch stuff in high school, and when I first started posting on YouTube, I'm sure you had the same mentality. You're just like, all right, shit, like, here we go, like, telling people, hey, look at this shit, like, look at me, I think this is fucking funny, and
right.
You got to start trying to build your brand, and taking the good and the bad, and but obviously people were way into it, but, like, so what was that stuff?
Yeah, the first sketch I ever did was just me alone in the sketch, and it was basically the day in the life of Justin Hires, and it was right. Just the sketch was essentially me jerking off in different locations in my house.
Dude, so simple,
it's so
simple.
True,
yeah.
It's
so true. Real.
Yeah. So it's like my alarm clock goes off, and Eye of the Tiger is playing in the background, and so it starts
I mean,
off.
An underrated jerk off song,
right?
Yeah. If there is
exactly.
I want to see that infomercial, like the same way you like. You remember the 70s? That was a magical time
to
then,
jerk it.
Yeah, and then like some guy just comes out and he's like, "Man, I like to jerk off, but I mean, sometimes you just need that accompaniment. It's like you're with someone, but not really."
Introducing Jerking Into the 80s. All your favorite Lionel Richie classics.
Lionel Richie.
All right, so like, what were the locations?
One was, of course, my bed.
Yeah, of course.
One was a closet while I was eating a sandwich.
Jesus.
That's a multitask on another level.
One was under the kitchen table.
Well, sure, you don't want people to put their feet on it, right. So you're classy. You do it under the table. I mean, you're just a gentleman as far as I'm concerned.
I'm a gentleman.
Yeah.
One was in my living room while meditating.
That's some Russell Simmons shit.
It was some Russell Simmons stuff.
So you just kept heightening the location.
I kept heightening the location. And it was perfect. Oh, my God. So I was going out in one scene to check the mail. Mm-hmm. And maybe the cop did it for me. I think I might have asked him. But basically, I go out and check the mail because in between me jerking off, I was doing regular stuff. So I'll jerk off, and then it'll cut to me eating cereal. And you'll see me
jerking
off again.
Sure, because
you're
not an animal.
Right.
Yeah,
and
so something.
And you will see the time elapsing throughout
so
the day.
Funny, yeah.
And I was going out to check the mail. And so that's one of the regular moments. I'm going to check the mail. And then a cop, police officer drives by. While I start busting out, jerking off. And it's like, whoop, whoop. And I'm like, oh. And then I run back into the house.
So that went viral?
No. That was the first sketch. The first sketch I did that went viral. That was the first sketch I ever did on YouTube.
Gotcha.
Dude, that's a good one.
And how was that? Like, who did you send that to your folks?
I sent it to everybody. That's when even, like, chat rooms were still around. And I was like, I was, like, putting it in chat rooms.
Wow.
And people was like, I just wasted 3 minutes of my life.
So some people are going age, sex, location. You're like, hey, watch a video of me jerking off. And then like some guys are hitting yes and going, okay, that was not what I wanted it to be. I want you to actually be jerking off, son of a bitch.
I'm sure some did. And so the first video I did that went viral was, that's when Chris Brown and Rihanna had their situation.
Sure.
And so I wanted to do it, but I wanted to do it in a somewhat tasteful way.
Yeah.
So what I did was I put me and a girl in a Street Fighter setting. So I animated it. I had like a power bar. My friend knew how to do graphics.
Yeah.
And so we were live action, but like there was graphics. So I was like shooting out. She was shooting out like umbrellas. Like she's like, umbrella, umbrella. And I was shooting out like double mint gum. I was like, double mint gum. Because that's when he had that endorsement double mint gum.
Yeah, that didn't last long.
No, it didn't. Literally, that was the commercial ran in the week after he got into it with Rihanna. Jesus.
Yeah.
And so that was the first one that went
by. Dude, topical shit is... I think still the way to go. I mean, that's why anything that from SNL that really gets featured is like always obviously like political or whatnot. But like to make a big splash, like you got to be commenting on something that's
and that's
current.
Yeah, and that's got to be like you said, you want to be tasteful. That's got to be hard when you're trying to think of a sketch. It's like, okay, I don't want to do a sketch where it's like supporting anything that Chris is doing, but. But you at the same time you want to walk that line and still be like kind of edgy.
Edgy, right?
And you know that when you put something out like that, you probably saw this. There will probably be some people that no matter what are going to hate it just because of the topic matter.
Right. Absolutely.
They don't even care about the content.
Yeah.
But
you were
way ahead of the game in that.
My first YouTube video that went viral was a Two Girls One Cup reaction video. I did Kermit the Frog again. Hey. To speak to your first one, jerking off two girls, one cup.
Yay!
And it. I mean, dude, like 6 million hits in like a couple weeks. And again, two girls, one cup was like the talk of the town for a
a time frame in this country, which is bananas.
And those Two Girls, One Cup reaction videos.
The reaction videos, right. Yeah. I mean, right? You remember?
When I remember, I never saw it.
Where were you when you first saw Two Girls, One Cup?
I never watched it. I remember
our parents had the Kennedy assassination. We have Where Were You When You Saw Two Girls, One Cup.
Sadly,
so
we
true.
Yeah.
So true.
So you never saw it. Good for you.
I never saw it. I think I seen a turtle head coming out, and I said, nope, that's enough. And then I just stopped it right
there. Well, let me just tell you that. I mean, you stopped yourself from seeing a whole lot of stuff you can never erase. Because just us talking about it right now, I'm seeing the whole video in my head.
Yep. I got about 15 seconds in, and the thing is I was watching it on a public forum. I was on the Man Cow radio show, and Dustin Diamond, Screech, walks in, and he doesn't even say hi to me. He's just like, dude, check this out. And Dustin Diamond showed me Two Girls, One Cup. And you on the radio, you just heard me going,
you were throwing up.
Oh, my God. I couldn't take it.
It's awful.
Is there anything? I mean, at this point, too, there's the accessibility for crazy shit on the internet is kind of. Dude, I watched a video today of a jaguar. Was it a jaguar or a leopard?
One of those things that.
It wasn't a cheetah.
Something that a football team's named after?
I think it was a jaguar. Okay. Escaped in India and, like, mauled six people.
Oh, shit.
And I see this posted. The tagline was just, leopard escapes in India, mauls people. And I was like, fucking, I got a couple minutes to burn here at the airport. And I've never seen that, so I want to see that right now. And, dude, it was...
Are you now regretting seeing that?
Oh, yeah, man. Well, nobody died from it.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I always walk away being like, all right, cool. No casualties, but like, holy shit, man.
Yeah, you can go down a YouTube dark hole pretty quickly.
Yeah, have you had, before you reached fame and fortune, have you had some dark nights here in L.A. where you just YouTube some sad shit?
Well, no. That's when I watch my YouTube videos. They're sad enough, some of them.
Dude, but like you're one of these guys because now the YouTube star is a thing. Like now, like there's people that just make their money and make their living on YouTube. I got a couple that live in my building that girls like they wait outside. And when I first saw the girls waiting outside of my building all the time, I was like, "Is an athlete here? Right. Is like what the hell is happening here? Is a One Direction member in my damn apartment complex?" Yeah. I asked them. They're like, "Oh, we're here for the I don't want to say who, but this YouTube dude." And it's like, "Wow."
Well, you were saying when you and Spoken started in Florida around the same time, yeah, and you saw him,
yeah. Well, not around the same time.
Okay.
I did YouTube stuff, I think, before he started.
Did, yeah.
And then we kind of connected because we were both from Florida.
Right. Yeah. And then you were saying when you saw him get the heat, you were like, all right, I got to focus back from...
stand-up and acting.
Right.
You know, serious shit.
Right. You're like, I get back on this YouTube.
Get back on this YouTube.
But it's not like stopped. You just were like, I need to throw that back into the mix.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. I was like, you know, I feel like if you ain't creating, you waiting.
Yeah.
Type thing.
And these days, you gotta have your hand in all the pools. I feel like
you do.
Because I would see you. I think we first met at the HaHa, probably.
Yeah, right? Probably so. Yeah.
And then the next time I saw you after a handful of shows was MTV Jerks with Cameras, right?
Was that
the first like TV thing you got?
No, I mean,
or no.
I've done some other stuff. I had before Jerks with Cameras. I did Disaster Date.
Oh, nice.
I was also on MTV, so that was the same production company.
Yeah.
So that might have been like the first kind of consistent TV gig I had.
That was a prank show too, right?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know. I watched a bunch of episodes of Disaster Date because that was one that Jeff Keith was on too, right?
Yeah. Jeff, that's
and,
a homie.
Yeah, and then like I was just amazed between that and Jerks with Cameras. I'm like, how? I don't know how you guys don't break because when you're doing that stuff and people are freaking out. I know that I'd be like, it's a joke.
Well, I did do that one time because I was about to get my ass beat. And I was like, I can't get beat up on MTV.
What happened?
It was a middle finger prank. And I walked up to random people and I was like, hey, I got something for you. And then I just flick them off. And so, like, I would reach in my
pocket.
Simple and effective, right? And I did that to, man, he must have been like some Mexican gangbanger or something.
Fuck, man.
And I was too close to him when I did it.
Of course.
And so he turned and he looked like he was finna try to sock the shit out of me. And I was like, hey, it's a prank show.
Oh,
he was like, oh, man, I just got out of therapy. And I was trying to, I was like, oh.
And I said to myself, man, if one more person gets fucking 2 inches from my face seriously. With a finger, yeah.
Seriously.
Dude.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, my therapist told me not to take any more shit. So then, like, you just come up and I'm like, well, here's where I stop taking shit.
But the producers are probably so pumped. Like, this is great TV. Yeah, let them hit you.
Yeah, they're jerking off in a truck somewhere. Like, yeah, yeah, Justin, yeah.
This is great. Ratings.
Ratings.
They really, that prank shit is not going anywhere. And it's like the envelope just continues to get, I mean, I think Punk'd for MTV really like set the bar. And then it's like, but like the Disaster Date shit seems almost even, because you would be one of the people on the dates with the chicks, right?
Right, yeah.
Did you ever meet with a girl that you were like, oh, she's kind of dope, I wish I didn't have to fuck with her right now? Or
Yeah, I mean, I met with some attractive chicks, and sometimes the girls didn't overreact to me because they found me attractive. And so they was like putting up with my crap because they was like, well, he is still cute at the end of the day.
Dude, there's and as guys, we could all attest to this. There is a line of how much you'll put up with based on how attractive the other person is.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, wow, you're ridiculously hot. I'll absolutely listen to your dream and how you interpret the Zodiac.
Right. Like, that's true, though.
you'll just put up with it. And, yeah, so I'm sure there was a hope for some of the girls, like, to look at you, to like, all right, well, okay, he did just do the Mexican hat dance in front of our Mexican waiter, but I
did a lot.
Something.
Yeah, what was the craziest shit you did?
One of them, I had to like pretend like I was a ninja, and like I had like I was a perverted ninja, and like I took tampons and tied them together like nunchucks. And I'm like swinging on, and I was like, oh, I know karate. And I'm like just swinging tampons around.
God. You do that. That's the type of shit you have to commit so hard to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just. Because also, this day and age, and even when the show was on, like, there's been enough prank shows to where people can. We'll start to assume, like, okay, man, like, this is even too crazy for
right.
what's happening right now.
Right.
Because
yeah.
I'm sure you had to bring up, like, casually, like, yeah, no, I used to be a ninja, right? Or like, what?
See, the best thing about the prank shows were mm-hmm. they taught me how to be a better actor. Meaning, you have to be natural so you don't give away the prank.
Right.
So you have to kind of like play it very calm and kind of ease your way into the crazy stuff.
Right.
If you go over the top too soon, then they gonna be like, wait a minute, this is fake. Something's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Can't just sit down and the waiter comes over and says, would you guys like something to drink? And then you just pull out a tampon nunchuck.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, look what I can do.
Exactly.
Like, you can't do that.
So that it really helped me with my acting, actually.
Did you take acting classes when you got out here, or did you do it back in Florida?
I actually graduated from Performing Arts High School.
Oh, shit.
So I did theater performance in high school. And before that, I was doing Shakespeare in the Park in the Tampa Bay area because I'm originally from Florida. I definitely have an acting background.
How was the performing art? Pretty dope.
It was great, man.
I mean, it's all – so your focus is – everything is acting and voice and movement and all that stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, they teach you Uta Hagen and all these different acting techniques and how to break down monologues and stuff like that. And it was great, man. They let you cuss, you know.
Yeah.
They was letting me do me.
Were you the funny kid in the class?
I was always the funny kid. I won most humorous in high school – 12th grade, and I won most humorous in elementary, and I won most likely to be in a movie in middle school.
Whoa.
Dude, you won all.
You did
it. You know what, though?
I did it, right?
You won Jump Street, baby.
But that's like a sense of pride. Hell, like, I won most likely to become famous senior year, and, like, I, like, call up the other girl, like, hey, what the fuck? I'm doing my part. Like, where are you?
Like, she's like, well, I was voted most likely to go to a Baskin-Robbins after graduating.
Right.
And I did that.
I was voted most likely to be a LeBron James side bitch. And I succeeded.
Well, you
I
know
have
what?
A house in Malibu.
Kudos to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's weird how, like, you get voted that and then you almost feel like some sort of sense of responsibility. Like, well, I guess I have to.
Yeah, exactly.
I have people counting on me.
Man.
Yeah, it would be great if somebody did call you out for that. Like, if you didn't make it and somebody like just hit you up on Facebook and be like, yo, just man, Remember, like 15 years ago, you were voted most humorous in the sixth grade.
Exactly.
What the fuck? What's going on with that, man?
Because you got to realize, there's a funny dude that works at FedEx right now. Yeah. Like, he was probably voted, you know,
for
class clown,
sure, dude.
And like, yeah, he's fucking.
Now, what were you doing in elementary school that was, you know, getting you this reputation and
man,
the award?
I actually remember the funniest joke. This joke is gonna seem so probably stupid now.
Well, of course. However, remember, it's elementary.
It's
school.
Elementary yeah. school.
Okay.
And this is when I knew I was a beast. This is when I knew, yo, I got something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody was sitting in their chairs or something. For whatever reason, I dropped down on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. And my teacher was like, Justin, get up. And I was like, get up, get off that floor. Everybody do the dinosaur. But when you're 10, I mean, that killed. I'm talking about it. Killed the crowd.
You got
the audit man. The students went crazy.
You got everybody's chocolate milk at lunch. Everyone's just like, you know what? You take it. You burned it.
I'm telling you,
dude.
Man.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And then middle school was like the lunchroom. Middle school, I was like, yeah.
Lunchroom was my audience too, man. Yeah. That's a. Yeah. I mean, that's when you got everybody.
That's key demographics, right?
Dude, hell yeah. Because everyone's just because there's a lot of people are eating their lunch, but it's like background music to like conversations, and everybody yeah, sure. wants to. Everyone wants to also like. If something funny's happening, like people will go stand around tables
yeah,
and shit.
They all want to yeah. be in on it.
Usually it's in the place where also like there's the stage, right? So you have yeah. So you know.
Yeah.
Wait, so when you did this dinosaur dance, did the teacher go, Justin Hires, shut the fuck up? Or did she join in? Or like,
I think she actually started laughing. And okay, that's cool. When I was like, fuck, I'm good. And then actually in the first time a teacher took notice in me was also fifth grade when I was 10. Yeah. My music teacher... She wanted me to be the host of like the big music production that we did at the school, mm-hmm. And so I didn't know. I knew I was funny, but she saw that in me to be like, "Yo, we need to have him doing something." So yeah, shout out to her, whoever she was.
I don't know her name or nothing.
The most influential person.
It's Miss Bitch.
Well, Miss Bitch. I don't know why you're laughing. That's actually her name.
Well, Miss Bitch could be the teacher or
Dutch.
PTA president in our favorite sitcom. What's it called again?
Damn, I forgot the name of it.
Well, fuck, that's not gonna help.
That's my nigga. Yeah.
Because I don't want this tape to come up when I get a sitcom someday.
Right, exactly.
It's like, well, Brad Williams said the N word in a podcast. I didn't know.
That's
so
exactly what would happen. TMZ would be all over it.
Wait, so did you? Because when we did the show at the Comedy Store a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. you did an amazing Chris Rock.
Thanks, man.
And I can only imagine that was also a part of like how you started to make people laugh, right? Was impersonating,
yeah,
whether it was friends or teachers.
Yeah,
or
probably friends and stuff like that. And I think my friend Quentin used to do a Bill Cosby impersonation. And so then I kind of learned how to do a Bill Cosby impersonation from him.
Because you saw that it was killing.
I saw it was killing. Yeah. I was like, I got to get in on this. Yeah. I got to take this, make it better.
Yeah. It works.
And so, so I started doing Bill Cosby. And then when I first started doing stand-up, I didn't have no jokes. Mm-hmm. But I could imitate people. But I mean, yeah. So, but now my comedy is, you know, I talk about my career, I talk about my family. I do.
We got a point of view now.
Yeah, I got a point of view now.
Yeah,
I got some stuff
to
talk about.
What was your? I mean, Cosby, an elementary school Cosby impression, or what?
There you go,
Cosby.
That's
all you need.
It's funny that just about everyone I see do a Cosby. Yes, we're doing the voice, but when you do that voice, there's something about you start looking up.
You got to do the Cosby face.
Yes, you have to.
Because you have to look up at the ceiling, because that's the only way. I write bitches.
That was a Cosby deep cut by Justin Hires.
Dude, that.
I'm joking.
See, but the face you make, though, is like. That,
you have
like,
to do it.
Yeah.
You just have to. Like, I don't know.
And there's
what
a staple.
It is.
There's a staple. There's like a handful of things you have to. Like, you have to mention Pudding Pops at one point. You have to mention one of the family. Like, when I used to do it.
And you also have to mention Quaaludes now.
Theo, show me where to put my Quaaludes. I'm trying to get the Pudding Pop.
That was a good Cosby.
Yeah. All right. Justin, you play good Cosby.
Okay.
Trying to tell Adam, who's playing current day bad Cosby.
Yikes.
How to give him
what
some advice.
What to look out for?
Yeah.
What to look out
for? Yeah, what to look out for.
Okay, so, listen, Cosby.
Hello, Cosby from the past.
Cosby from the future. I need you to sit down.
I'm sitting already.
And I need you to listen.
Could I get a root beer?
No, you see, that's where the problem started. It's the drinking and the sipping and the D's and the pills and the this and that. Listen, what I'm trying to tell you is to just get pussy the regular way.
But I don't know how, because my ways are different. I like putting pills in the food.
Don't put the pills in the food. You can't put pills in food.
How else are you supposed to trick them if
you can't to get the pussy?
You can't show them the pill and then say, take this.
Cosby,
you got to hide it in the pancakes.
Listen, you got to understand that you're Cosby. You're already Cosby. You don't need to trick the bitches.
And scene.
Theo!
good job.
That's good stuff right there. Yeah, teamwork.
Should animate that, right?
Should animate that.
Hey, fans of the About Last Night podcast, do that. just animate it. We want to do the work. You guys do it.
Yeah, please. Was he one of your influences?
Yeah, man, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I grew up watching The Cosby Show.
Come on, so did I.
Dude. I think most people did.
Until a year and a half ago, he's... Like, you know what I mean? You didn't have to justify being a Cosby fan. Everybody was.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think everyone still is a fan of the art.
Art of, exactly.
Of the art.
Absolutely.
Not so much the other stuff.
Yeah. Right.
But a fan of the art. And it's still safe to say that. I don't have any hesitation saying one of the greatest comedians of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you would watch him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mad I can't watch Cosby Show on TV Land no more. I mean, I used to watch, they started pulling it, I would still watch those episodes when they came on when I was at the house. And I'm talking as early as 2 years ago. You know, I would still be watching those episodes. So,
hey, Family Matters. So,
still watch Family Matters, but it's unfortunate, you know, what happened and, you know, all that situation, but, you know, him as a comedian.
Right.
Yes, I'm still a fan, and I still thank you.
What was the first stand-up you saw that made you go, oh, shit? Like, for me, it was Eddie Murphy.
I think it might have been Eddie Murphy. I probably saw Eddie Murphy Raw.
Yeah.
Even before I saw Eddie Murphy Delirious.
That was me, too.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy Raw.
Yeah, and I think I was about to go to school one day, and it was on HBO or something. And I was like, what? What is this?
And there was no DVR, so you're like, I got to catch it now, or who knows?
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So, I mean, that was just an amazing experience to me. So I would say, Eddie Murphy Raw was probably the first one.
And then you have something in common with Adam that I thought was fascinating, is that you guys were both college DJs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I know Adam's told a bunch of stories how, like, he was up late at night, and he would do, like, crazy sketches, right?
Well, my slot was midnight to 2 a.m., and I got the job based on – I just lied about having all sorts of other experience. And they wanted you to intern for a whole semester before you got your own show. And I'm like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. All I had to do was figure out eventually how to, like, you know, bring up the music and screen calls, which I wouldn't do, which is what inevitably led to me being fired, because I would just be like, looks like we got a caller, let's take him. Like, I was like, there's like British guy coming over, where I would just like, you know, use it to practice stand-up bits and have my friends from Seattle call in and like do games and shit. But it was midnight to 2 a.m. at USC, because there was no comedy show, so it was all music. But it was like on the internet, it would broadcast to greater LA. So it was like, why isn't anybody doing a comedy show?
True.
But there, you know, you couldn't curse and shit like that, and I would, and I got fired.
The downfalls of radio.
So you did yours at.
I did mine at Clark Atlanta University.
Yeah.
That's where I graduated, and I did it like freshman year, and then I did it a little bit senior year, and then MTV actually discovered me and hired me to be a video jockey.
What?
They saw me. Yeah.
It's insane. MTVU.
MTVU. They defined. Me, they hired me straight out of high school. I mean, out of college. And so while I was actually in college, they hired me. I went down to Cancun for spring break, and I was interviewing Akon and Jeezy and Gym Class Heroes.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. Then they flew me to New York to actually. They have something called the Woody Awards. So that's like MTVU's version of the VMAs.
Right. Okay.
And so I presented with Lupe Fiasco at that time period.
Dude.
And yeah, man, it was crazy.
What? I mean, is that you think you've made it at that point? You get plucked from radio DJ in college, you're like, MTV Cancun, like, this is what Pauly Shore did. Now it's Justin Hires' turn.
Now it's me. Well, you know what? I actually had an opportunity to be a full-time
VJ.
VJ.
Oh, yeah.
With MTVU.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided to come out to LA and pursue my acting.
Good move,
wow.
dude. I mean, that's a good move.
But tough move, but, right?
Because you get a little taste of that and you're like, let me ride this out.
It is a tough move, especially when you don't know nobody in LA. And I'm like, but I believe in myself.
Hey, dude.
You, though, man.
And, like,
but I got rush hour, so you know. It's okay.
Man, like, and then did you ask your parents about that? Like, what should I do? Did they give advice?
Yeah, I did ask my parents. But, you know, it was like, follow your heart and go with what's going to make you happy. And at the end of the day, I actually do still want to interview people. I like doing stuff like that.
Great experience from doing it, I'm sure.
Exactly. So, I mean, I still like interviewing people, but I just knew I wanted to focus on my acting first. And then, if anything, go back.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even on YouTube, I had a little web series I did.
I saw it with Damon Jr.
I did one with Damon Jr., one with Brandon T. Jackson, one with Afion Crockett called Real Talk with Justin.
Yeah, you're great with that. You're so natural and easy. And, like, I mean, that's definitely another world I feel like you should, you know, pursue.
Thanks, man. That's what I'm going to try to,
Tool in the kit, dude.
One more tool in the kit.
And then, like,
wait, I want to hear real quick some Cancun stories.
Oh, boy.
Well, nothing happened.
Because those MTV, behind the scenes of Spring Break, like, that was when I was in high school, and I would watch those, like, religiously, like, oh, I can't wait to get to college. This looks so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was dope, but, I mean, I was in a relationship.
Oh, shit.
So, you know, I couldn't do nothing, you know, but look at all the women I couldn't stick my stuff in. But they wanted to give it to me, though.
Oh, for sure,
they wanted to do it. It's so crazy, because, like, Nick Cannon was down there at that time, because they were shooting, like, Wildin' Out. The Cancun version or whatever.
Jesus, that's popular.
So I saw Nick Cannon and Afion Crockett before I got to really know them.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Now they're homies.
Yeah, Afion is. Nick Cannon, I know Nick Cannon. Like, we follow each other on social media, but we're not like best friends or nothing. But I was just backstage at the new tape in a while.
Oh, nice.
So I was
How is it?
It was dope. It was dope, man. Oh, yeah. So I was hollering at Nick, and I had went with Afion, and yeah, man, it was good.
It's kind of crazy that you can get to a certain level with Twitter to where you're like, oh, yeah, I can have, like, certain people, you're just like, yeah, I'm friends with them on Twitter. Like, Crystal Lee was telling me how the Backstreet Boys got on Undateable. Is he AJ, one of the guys, was following him on Twitter. They started going back and forth, and then Chris was like, you guys should come on the show, and then the ball got rolling or whatever. And I'm like, man,
that's insane.
And I'm like, well, how many tweets do I have to send to Katy Perry before our friendship develops?
Well, you know what I'm saying? Here's the thing. That might be considered stalking. But listen.
I don't think so, man.
This is what
my dick pics are solidly filtered.
Can a future Bill Cosby tell current Adam Ray not
to? This is what you got to do. You got to slip in the Mickey. Well, this is what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Meek Mill has a saying, the rapper. He said, it's levels to this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's all about levels. So there are certain people I could tweet that'll tweet me back.
Yeah.
And then there's other people I will tweet, and they will never tweet me back until I get to a level where they think, okay, I could tweet. I'll tweet Justin back now.
Now, what level do you – like Jaden Smith. We sometimes read his tweets.
I'm not even on Jaden Smith level. If I tweet him, he would be like,
Have you read his tweets before?
No.
Oh,
I like –
God, they're awesome.
All right.
At some point –
This guy's in the universe collab. Dude, and then,
oh, dude, what you're – yeah. All right. Brad, can you pull up a few?
Yeah. This is just – and if – you know what?
Because what you just said is so funny, but also so close to his actual tweets.
Really?
Absolutely. I know we've read some of these before, but you know what? It's kind of like, for me, when Goodfellas comes on, like, you know every line of the movie, but you still watch it.
Yeah, still watch it.
And it's still good.
Well, maybe – wait. So
speaking of Ray Liotta, has he had work done? I'm trying to figure
out. Come on. Somebody just told me that – opened my eyes up to the idea that men get Botox.
Maybe that's what he gets done.
He must.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
he's great on that Shades of Blue, though.
Is it
like
dope?
Yeah, I like it.
Somebody told me that the show is J-Lo just hooking up with somebody every episode.
I'm a whore. No. This is what...
She looks good, though.
She's undercover. She looks great.
Fuck this.
And I mean, she's like 63. I don't know how old she is. But
all right,
my dad sent me an email a few weeks ago saying J-Lo's has a residency starting at Planet Hollywood. We gotta go.
Yeah, she's.
And
bad.
I'm like, Dad, you've never sent a what? More like an email that I need to respond to and you know start organizing quicker to.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Here are some Jaden tweets just
I
in case you're not
ass.
Just
I
in case you're
Jaden's
not
ass.
Familiar with the magic.
I'm sorry. Let's go.
No. All right, and then we'll get back to J-Lo's ass because that's always a good topic. If newborn babies could speak, they would be the most intelligent beings on Earth.
I'll pass on that.
Can you give...
If a bookstore never runs out of a certain book, does that mean that nobody reads it or everybody reads it?
That's deep.
Wait, can you hand it to Jay and let him do it as Chris Rock?
Oh. Hold on.
Because that actually might make it great.
Okay.
Which one? Oh, he has a lot. That's funny.
Yeah, here are some just like some of the greatest hits.
Let's see. Oh, okay, here, go here. The Great Gatsby is one of the greatest movies of all time. Coachella.
What did he end up with Coachella?
I have no idea. Jonah Hill is a genius. I did a movie with Jonah Hill, 21 Jump Street. He is a genius.
He is, okay.
Most trees are blue.
Why did he tweet that?
These are so much better.
There is nutrients in our food. Oh, my bad. I can't read. There is no nutrients in our food anymore, or in our soil, or in our water. The fuck is he talking about? Hey, man, he wears dresses. So.
Yeah, he does.
He does?
Yeah, now he wears dresses.
Is that what that...
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, he literally, like, models women's clothes.
Yeah.
What? This might seem like a stupid question, but why?
Because he's Jaden Smith.
Because he's Jaden Smith, and no one's ever said no to him, ever.
Yeah, he does whatever he wants.
I wonder how much parenting Will Smith is really doing, because, hey, man, from a guy who sung Parents Just Don't Understand... Maybe right. He now on the flip side, he's like, fuck, we don't
understand.
So I'm not even going to try to tell this kid not to wear dresses.
Man. Or he's trying to keep it so real. It's like, dude, I could understand, but then I would be going back from my art. So I just got to stick with that message.
Right.
And just be like, parents just don't understand.
Jaden Smith.
That's
yo.
Nuts.
So when you got 21 Jump Street, mm-hmm. that was, you went from, Disaster Date?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a fucking... that because in this business, which we've talked about before, it's like, you're grinding, you're hustling, you're doing... Like, when we were both at the Ha Ha, I'm sure we're both just like fucking trying to do as much videos and stand up and auditions and just like having good auditions and then like not hearing shit and then getting close and then like... but you just have to... I'm curious from your standpoint, like, what is it... Keeping yourself busy obviously helps so that you're not like putting all your eggs in one basket for an audition.
Right.
But like, are you just a... Just you have a strong mentality when you came out here of just being like, look, I'm just like, I know it's going to take time or.
Yeah. Well, I always told myself it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I was like, no matter how long it's going to take, I'm going to do it. Because I look at people like Bernie Mac, you know, Steve Harvey and be like, you know, and Rodney Dangerfield and be like, these guys took forever to pop. But it doesn't negate the hard work that they put in. Like, these guys were funny and it just takes some people a while to pop.
Yeah.
And I just always kind of kept that in perspective. But also at the same time, I was like, when I moved out here, I was like, I'm moving out here to be a TV and movie star. Like, that was like my objective, you know?
That's happening. There's nothing stopping you.
So far,
fuck yeah, dude.
It's working
out. So then you get 21 Jump Street, and then, I mean, that, so what do you...
You know what's so funny? Ironically, Jonah Hill... hire me because he saw my audition tape and said he reminded me like I was going to be the next Chris Tucker.
Whoa. And now.
Yeah, I know, that's so crazy,
bro. So, maybe, so you know what?
On next week, Jaden, that's mine.
That's my nigga.
apparently, Jaden Smith, I maybe have to take back everything I said about you because Jonah Hill apparently is a genius.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate that. Yeah, so, I mean, that was crazy, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What was filming that like?
It was great, man. Yeah. It was the best like acting learning experience because I saw Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill doing a scene. They were just walking down a hallway at school talking. And then it clicked for me that, they're not acting, yo. They just talking. Like sometimes actors, like, they talk like this in an audition.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. And then they wonder why they don't book. It's like, you don't sound natural.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You just need to talk.
Less is more.
Less is more. And so watching that, just being on set and watching that, I was like, and so that helped my acting. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of like how athletes always describe whenever they play with, like, a Jordan or a Kobe or a two-time Super Bowl champion, Peyton Manning, they elevate everyone else's game.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, when you're around people like that, I'm sure it's like, I got to do better
because
I got to be at their level. I got to act like I belong here.
It's so true. Man, there was even – days on Rush Hour where other actors like guest stars would come in Mm-hmm. And they're acting. I'd be like, oh, I got to get my shit together. I'm the star of the show. I might want to step up my acting right now. So, being around Channing and Jonah, I mean, that definitely made me elevate my game.
And you told me as we were walking in, Rush Hour, the reboot of the movie series as a TV show.
Yeah. Shout out.
Huge.
Thursday, March 31st.
March 31st.
CBS.
10 p.m. CBS.
And hour long.
Hour long, man.
See, that's
action,
the thing.
Action comedy.
Yeah, it's not a half hour. Like, this is going to be a fucking show.
It's a show.
This is a show that people are going to watch for 1 hour. You only get 24 of these things in a day, and people are going to spend one watching this show. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. I feel honored. I feel fortunate, blessed. I feel all those things, man. I just hope people like it.
When you get brought up to stage now, when you start headlining, like I saw you posted you're going back to Baltimore, and you'd been there with Afion to feature, and now you're going back to headline for the first time.
Right, yeah.
So you're going to come up from Jerks with Cameras. Or you'd probably swap that out.
I'll probably swap that out. Yeah. I mean, they could say that as long as they end with Rush Hour.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, man, it's crazy, yo. I mean, I always tell people, I want everybody to know I'm not doing like a Chris Tucker impression on the show.
Right.
Like, I'm making it my own.
Well, because you kind of have to, because you're not going to do Chris Tucker better than Chris Tucker. You know what I mean? And like, he made that character so iconic. It's like, nah, I can't. Like, in the same way, kind of going back to your first movie in 21 Jump Street, they didn't try to do, no one did a Johnny Depp impression.
Exactly.
Or the other guy that I can't. That I can't that
now,
I can't
did they
think of his name.
Did they come to you from the casting perspective? And you know, cause sometimes they'll give you notes right away and say, yo, like, we dig you. Like, come in. Don't do, like, can you?
Well,
we're not looking for a replica of Tucker, but have some of the same essence, obviously, because it's based on the movie.
Well, you know what? I didn't listen to their advice because this is what happened. I got brought in super last minute. I wasn't even, because I was attached to another pilot.
Mm-hmm. The Ken Jeong one.
The Ken Jeong one.
Yeah.
I was attached to the Ken Jeong pilot. And so
the one that and Peter Seagal has been on the podcast.
Oh, he was on it.
Yeah.
Oh,
so that's how that's when I saw Justin at the test and
nice.
And he did it
for Dr. Ken.
Yeah. So you were locked in to do that.
So I was locked in to do that. We was waiting to see if it was gonna get picked up. And then something happened where they wanted to do some recasting.
Yeah.
And so I was still involved in it, but they had to do some recasting. So they finally was like, all right, we'll see Justin for Rush Hour because we can't find who we're looking for. So they let me come in the very last day of auditions.
And because you and I'm sure they were because you were just starting to get into the groove of acting, right? So like, there's a lot of other people with more experience and bigger resumes ahead of you.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they couldn't find it.
Yeah.
So they were like, all right, let's start going to people who might just be great that we're not looking at because they don't have the fucking long IMDb page.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they finally looked at me, and I think one of my friends went in and he was like, yeah, they said they didn't want us to go too big and, you know, don't go over the top, and I was like, listen. I grew up watching Rush Hour.
I love
those movies, right? Mm-hmm. I love Chris Tucker. I love Rush Hour. I love buddy cop films. Ain't nobody, I was finna say something else. Ain't nobody go tell me, a young black dude, how to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, your background, what you were raised like, you can't tell me how to do this. Because only a young black guy.
Yeah, and more often than not, it's probably old white execs that we're trying to be like, well, this is how you do it. This is how you play a young black cop.
He said it, I did it.
Yeah.
But so I was like, I'm just fucking going to do me.
Cool. Yeah.
Now, they can either cast me or they could say, we don't like that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go out on my own merit if I don't book it.
Because then if you don't and you bow to their whims and then you don't get it, then you're always thinking, what if?
But
if you do it the way you wanted to, the way you planned it, and the way you know the stuff that you know you could bring to the role, then if you don't get it, you're like, you know what? But I did how I wanted
to do it. I took a shot. Yeah. And so I'm a strong believer in, you know, I'll do it my way and then you can give me some adjustments.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so that's essentially, but I did it my way off tops and killed. Had a great audition.
Did you ad lib? How are you? You seem like you're extremely charismatic in the room with everybody. Like when you come in, right?
Yeah.
That's, for me, sometimes I've had to tone that back because I'll make too much. banter and small talk and jokes, and then I'm like, dude, maybe just shut the fuck up and get in there and do the audition.
Yeah, it's a fine line.
Yeah,
actors should notice if anybody is still listening to this point.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah, people
okay.
love this podcast.
Okay, great.
We hope.
Well, actors should know that it's a very fine line between coming in, being charismatic, having a little small talk with the casting directors, but mm-hmm. then knowing to not do that shit too much and get to reading the lines.
Yeah, because they got to see 47 people that day.
Exactly.
And they don't want to spend 22 minutes talking to you.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, I do that. And I improv. You know, I do the script, but also within the script, if I see a joke somewhere out there.
If it's in the context of what's going, yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so then you leave and you're like, all right, well, shit, I did the best I can do.
Yeah, so I did that, went good. The actors that was coming in after me, because they could hear through the walls, they was like, nigga, we ought to go home.
Oh, you're crushing.
Dude, then, that's good to hear.
Right, and I was like, well, yes, you should. but no, I didn't say that, but.
And the guy that told you that was going out for the Jackie Chan part, so the fact that he was Asian
right.
and still said that to you, that's.
Exactly, that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and so, I actually heard that they had passed still because I think they was looking at somebody else, or probably a bigger name. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that didn't go through. And then they had me do a callback last minute on tape that they wanted me to submit. And so I submitted the tape. I went to go do a show in Texas. When I landed in Texas, I was only there for like 2 hours to do like South by Southwest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was only there for about 2 hours. I get a call from my manager saying Warner Brothers is going to pay to fly you back out to L.A., so you could test tomorrow morning. So I didn't even get to do those shows.
That is a whirlwind of fuck. I mean, like,
it was crazy.
Literally, you land, you just got to get back on, and then
that's exactly what happened.
Are you on the plane, or are you just going over your sides
I'm just
like
going
crazy?
Out, yeah, at the airport, because I mean, I was literally in Austin for like 2 hours. Then I'm heading back to the airport, and I'm the whole time at the airport, I'm just going over my sides. On the plane, going over my size that night,
preparing,
and then I had my test the next day for like 4 hours or something.
What? 4 hours?
It was crazy, yo.
Reading with
the SAT test wasn't that long.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy shit.
Exactly.
Had they already cast who's
John Fu.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They had already cast him, so he came in to read with me. So I think I just read with the producers, Bill Lawrence and Blake and Arthur and all those guys. I read with them first, and John Turtletub, the director. So I read with them first, then John came in. I read with him. Then we had to wait on the head of Warner Brothers to come in because he's the head of Warner Brothers.
He was taking a shit,
yeah. That's what
produced it. But were the stakes are higher. Are you more nervous at this point?
Nah, man. I don't buckle under pressure.
Shit, where do you get that from?
Like a champ, he responded like that. He didn't even hesitate.
He said that like Vlade Divac smoking a cigarette right at the foul line.
I don't buckle.
I don't buckle on the pleasure.
Well,
no. I buckle if you touch my shoulder, I may fall, but that's a flop. But
I'm a frail Yugoslavian.
Whatever, it's fine.
Nah, man, you know what? It comes from doing open mic comedy clubs. You know, it comes from doing open mic.
That prepares you for anything.
It prepares you for tests because look at it like this. When you do an open mic as a stand-up comedian, you're in there, especially when it's all comics in the room.
Yep.
You're in there with like 5 to 12 comics. They don't give a fuck about what you're about to say.
Nope.
They're like, I hope you're funny, but in the meantime, I'm looking down at my cell phone, not paying attention to you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the environment that you placed in. So you have, when you do an open mic as a stand-up comedian, it's like, how can I be funny enough to get these comics to look up, pay attention, mm-hmm. and then laugh at the stuff I'm saying? So when I'm testing in front of like network executives, that's nothing.
Because they're paying attention.
Dude, they're actually paying. Well, some of them are.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, some of them are paying attention. Some of them ain't. But I'm like, if I could get a room full of bitter comedians to laugh, then I can. Not all of them bitter, but comics that's just like, they're just waiting to go up.
Yes. Yeah,
I'll say that.
They're just worried about their own set.
Yeah, they're worried about their own set. And I understand that. You know what I'm saying? I'm guilty of that also.
Mm-hmm. They're not there for the show. People in the test are there for the show.
Yeah, but people there for the test are there. They're there for the show.
Yeah.
And so when I'm in that room and I know they're looking at me, because at the end of the day, for the most part, they're hoping you are the right person.
Do they want you to make it easy for them?
They want you to make it easy for them. So I just go in there and, you know, do me. And I can honestly say I've never, so far, just knocked on wood, mm-hmm. I haven't had a bad test. I haven't always booked it, but I haven't had a test.
You walk out every time going, fuck, I did that. That's the best Justin hires.
Yeah.
That's, if they don't want that guy, then that's cool, but that's my take, and I fucking love what
Absolutely.
I just did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
great.
Dude, I say that all the time, getting to that point in and of itself takes time, man. Like, you talk about finding your voice as a comic takes time, but just getting comfortable with the audition process, where you walk out of the room, like, you have to have that mentality because, you know, you're not going to book every job.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while to get to that point to where you're getting in a groove to where, and then hopefully you start booking things and then people are coming at you for stuff.
Absolutely.
But just getting to a point to where you walk out going, cool, man, it's, I did everything I can. Because walk, you know, it happened to me when I was first getting going where I'd walk out and I would be bummed about not getting the job, but I'd be more bummed at myself because I'm like, dude, you didn't prep enough, or you didn't give your best version in there. You didn't give yourself an opportunity to get booked.
Right.
So if you didn't even do that, then what the fuck? So that's dope.
Yeah, man. Thanks, man.
I was gonna say, and then we both saw the preview that's online of the show.
We played during the Super Bowl too.
Yeah, man,
that was dope.
That's insane.
That I mean,
crazy,
what
man.
The hell?
So cool.
How many texts and tweets and fucking hand jobs did you get that day?
Man, well. I had one person eat my ass. No,
that's what a Super Bowl preview
does. That's what
do.
Super Bowl previews does. Yeah.
Holy crap.
You have women offering to eat your ass.
If you're out there listening, young comedians and actors, get a Super Bowl commercial, your ass will be eaten.
Wow. Had that moist booty last night.
That must have been crazy, though.
It was crazy, man. I mean, you know, I mean, I've never had like a Super Bowl commercial, so to have like, to me, to have a rush hour promo like air like right before the Super Bowl kickoff, it was crazy.
What was the coolest text you got?
I hope your show fails. No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
You know what though?
Sincerely, Bill Cosby from the future.
You know, I actually got a joke kind of like that about. I said how rude online comments are.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I was able to make the news public, the first comment said, "Fuck that nigga." He'll never be better than Chris Tucker. Signed, Chris Tucker. But,
joke.
So yeah. So I say that on my stand-up. But that's not true. I mean, he would never.
You met him, though, yeah?
I have met him. Hey, man.
Yeah.
Chris Tucker, I'm telling you, he's one of the reasons I got into stand-up comedy. Before I booked this show, I was doing a show at the Comedy Store. And I was just performing. He was just there. I guess he was about to go on tour or whatever, working on material. And he was just sitting in the audience, and I was having a great set. And I looked over and I said, I stopped my show and I was like, hey, man, I just want you to know I love you. You're one of the reasons I got into comedy. And I love you, bro. And he was like, I love you too, man. I love you too, man. And then, you know, and freaking 2 years later.
Wait, so at what point of the process of the show did he show up and, like, consult, obviously, right?
No, he didn't show up because he's busy.
Doing shit.
He's like father that wasn't there.
Oh, shit.
So you didn't see him at all during the...
No, not during the process. However... we do have all the original producers. Brett Ratner, who directed the movies. He's an executive producer. We have Arthur Sarkisian, who was the original producer of those films. He's one of the producers. So we have the original team that actually put the movie together.
Yeah.
So
you know he'll reach out at some point.
Yeah, well, yeah. I look at it like this. He wants to make sure that the show is successful.
Yeah, sure.
And I get that. I'm sure if the show is a hit, second season, I'm sure he'll pop up or something.
Come on. Right. That'd be amazing.
A cameo
be
or hell, even better, they'll make a Rush Hour 4, whatever the hell they're on.
And that's what I'm hoping for. And I'm hoping they do a Rush Hour 4.
Well, if this show does what I think it's going to do, then, yeah, dude, that's the logical next move.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So.
Back to the movies. And we saw the preview. It looks like and correct me if I'm wrong, it looks like the show starts off and kind of goes through, kind of reiterates the story, kind of like gets everyone set again. But then you guys, obviously, if you're shooting that many episodes and they're all an hour long, like you guys are going off into your own original plots, right?
Yeah, that's completely correct. So the first episode, the pilot episode, is like a reboot of the movie. Right. So there's going to be some similarities when it comes to certain scenes and stuff like that.
Yeah, hey, be a babysitter for this
all
Chinese guy coming in.
Yeah. And then every episode after that, episode 2 to 13, are completely new, crazy stories. You know,
awesome.
That's just brand new material. And it's dope, man.
And you got really to, like, excited. Shoot guns and shit. Like, dude, I mean, like, in the heat, I got the whole shoot and hold guns.
Mm-hmm.
And that was maybe some of the coolest shit I've ever done.
Yeah, and I've never shot a gun before.
Me neither. Well, Super Soaker, but that doesn't count.
Yeah, Super Soaker doesn't count. Yeah. I've shot my Johnson.
under the dining room table.
Under the dining room table. Mm-hmm.
Was that
Eye of the Tiger?
I feel like what you just explained was like a really perverted version of Clue. Like Justin Hires under the table, stroking his Johnson to Eye of the Tiger.
He won the game.
Yeah, that it was crazy. You know, I sometimes think because as an actor and a comedian, you go to the movies and you'll see other actors like doing like action scenes and stuff like that. And you're like, man, that'd be so cool to do. And then to be in a position that you're actually doing that stuff, and it's like, it's crazy. Like, I'm doing stunts. Like,
no prep work for that. Did you have, I mean,
no prep work. I mean, crazy enough, I am a first degree black belt.
What?
It's so random.
In what?
In karate. So
in what? What the fuck kind of question?
Well, there's different styles. There's kama gra, there's judo, there's taekwondo, there's karate.
All right, all right.
Yeah.
At least I just want to make sure you there's meant in what world of hand-to-hand combat fighting.
Yes.
I don't know if you meant like black belt of like Rice Krispie Treat cook-off.
No, yeah, no. Not like, oh, no, he's a black belt in accounting. Like, not that.
Yeah.
I'm the best at banking.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so, but it was so long ago. But however, those skills are still in me. And so you do that all the way back in middle school. You get your black belt. But for whatever reason, and because I'm black, I'm naturally athletic. And so you combine all of that.
What?
And
ESPN said that's not true.
Did they really? you combine all of that. And yeah, man. And my martial arts background definitely helped me like already be prepared to do like all those stunts and action sequences. I mean, I'm doing fight scenes, and that's like, we learn our fight scenes right before we shoot the fight scene.
No way.
It's not like a day of prep. It's not like a week of prep. It's like, so we're doing scene 39 right now. You have a fight scene. Here's the choreography. Y'all run it while we set up the cameras, and then they set up the cameras.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And
it's crazy.
Thank God. Yeah, I mean, Steve Martin wrote in his book, you're going to use everything you ever learned, and that's how true is that for you?
It's so true.
Because you were telling me at the Comedy Store that you just how exhausted you were, and you're like, people don't understand the hour show and you being in pretty much every scene, having so much dialogue that you have no downtime to do. I mean, to even be on your phone and be answering anything or tweeting anything, because when you're not shooting, you're memorizing lines.
Absolutely.
You're not memorizing lines, you're learning fight. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, it was the hardest thing I've ever done as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's much harder jobs than, you know, anybody in the military is doing a way harder job than what I'm doing.
Well, the fuck you to the Mexican guy seemed like not a, not a small task, but I mean...
But yeah, man, I mean, as an actor, I mean, I was doing 13 to 15-hour days every day, Monday through Friday.
For how many months?
6 months. And we only shot 13 episodes. A full order of a series is typically 22 to 24 episodes. I was happy that it was only 13 episodes because I was drained physically, mentally. It was crazy, but I was like, I got to put in this work and hopefully it pays off big.
What did you do to kind of get your mind straight each day? I mean, would you, I mean, could you sleep? Were you
Man,
so
because
being thrust into that world immediately, you've also just like, and dealing with now, like, I mean, I'm sure you got comfortable being on set, but now you're just like thinking like, man, I want to, you're so much more focused on like, I want to deliver on everything because this of what it could mean.
Yeah, right? And I mean, that's the crazy thing. You when you're doing so, when you're in almost every scene like I was, because everyone know acting is a hurry up and wait big job as an actor. So it's usually you hurry up, got to get the set at 6 a.m., but you don't shoot your scene until 1 o'clock p.m., right?
Yeah, no kidding.
But not when you're the star of the show.
No.
And not when it's the first season, and not when you're in every scene. So I would get there 6 o'clock, and, you know, I don't wrap till 9, 10 o'clock at night. And basically, I mean, I just had lunchtime. That's when I kind of got my breaks. I made sure that I went back to my trailer because I was on set all day talking to everybody and doing my scenes. But lunchtime is when I would go back to my trailer for that 30 minutes to an hour and just kind of reset and kind of
decompress and just not have to think business or anything for a while.
Absolutely.
And then you're... co-stars, is he like, did you guys do like a bunch of chemistry together, like chemistry reads, or is
they send you guys out for putt-putt tournaments like to build like
they're about to when John, we start promoting this show.
John Fu. They must have like been like, hey, you guys like hang out, like here's some Warner Brother cash and like go to a titty bar for a couple hours.
Well,
find out each other's favorite color.
Kind of. I mean, this is what happened when we did, when I had the test, that was my first time meeting him. So we had already read together, and the read went good. Yeah. Like, luckily, he allowed me room to play and improv, so that was great. Great of him.
You can tell, I think, initially, can't you, with another actor? You're just like, oh, I think we're on the same page.
Yeah.
You know, just vibe, styles.
Our chemistry is great because he's a natural introvert, and I'm a natural extrovert.
Which is the characters.
Which are the characters.
So that works.
So it works perfectly. And so when we were waiting on Peter Roth, the head of Warner Brothers, to get there, I made sure that we – found even more chemistry. So in that time when we were waiting, we went in the lobby. I was asking him about his family, his background,
awesome.
You know, mm-hmm. his martial arts, and all of that stuff, so that we could kind of build that rapport. So we did that. I got the job, and then people don't know the final audition. People, the actors listening, comedians, actors listening. The final audition really is the table read. So mm-hmm. even after you get the job, you have a table read.
They can still throw you out.
They can still kick your ass off. So I knew. So before we had the table read, I think Bill Lawrence might have suggested, the producer. He was like, y'all should probably go out and, you know, get some drinks together or something like that. So we met at a bar or something like that and just kicked it or whatever, talked or whatever. And yeah, because and so when we did that table read, I wanted to make sure we had as much chemistry as possible, because that's when they had a CBS is there in the room.
Les Moonves was there.
He wasn't there.
Yeah.
But Nina Tassler was there.
Jesus.
So Nina was there, and like, you got the heads of CBS, you got the heads of Warner Brothers, and it's like, that is your final audition.
Isn't that crazy? You had the job, but now you're really
still lose the job.
Yeah. You have the job, but you can still lose the job, because many actors have been fired after the table.
Well, there's so many cooks in the fucking kitchen that, like, and some of them don't show up until the meal's about to be served.
Exactly.
And they're like, what the fuck kind of sauce is in there?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you read that on a Snapple cap?
No, but that was a brilliant metaphor. That was a brilliant metaphor.
That was a good metaphor. I'd like to put a pill in and fuck it.
Okay. All right.
That's my nigga.
But yeah, man, you have one person that wasn't there just come and go,
exactly.
Does he have to?
Because if it's the one wrong, and I've learned that about testing for other shows.
Yeah.
Man, if the one person of ultimate power in that room don't like you.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. His teeth a little too big. You know, you don't know what the reasons are.
Yeah.
You cannot get the role. And so I knew when I did that table read, I have to perform like we are shooting this fucking show.
Right.
So and it worked out. And they actually told me, the heads of CBS, they came on set when we were shooting the series, and they was like, your table read won us over. Like, because you took control of the room.
What did you do that was different from any of the other auditions? I mean,
well, I don't even know if they really saw any of it. Well, they might have seen my callback. I guess they saw my testing tape.
But I mean, were you active? Did you get up?
I mean, I didn't get up. No. But I mean, I acted from that chair.
And you were not in your page too much. You knew your shit, so you were like, I want to, or
a little bit of both. I was like, I'm not going to fuck up these words.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I had to look down, I would look down, but I was still making sure I was acting and
giving a full performance.
Giving a full performance and delivering those words correctly.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, man.
That's smart, dude.
Yeah. Lesson, I mean, that is great advice for, God, not only for me to hear that, but just anyone who's getting in the heat of the grind and getting to that position to where that's a possibility. It's like you got to bring it all the time. Yes. And that's just, I think, mm-hmm. a rule of thumb for being in L.A. once you get to a place where, you know, you might be at the Comedy Store where there's nine people on a bringer show, or at the Improv on a packed house. But by the time you go up, you know, you just never know. And if you get in a rhythm of being consistent, I think, with like just bringing it all the time, it's you practice how you play, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of Devout said that.
You practice how you play. I practice falling down. What?
I also love Marlboro Reds.
John Fu, does he come from a martial arts background? Is he?
He does. I think he told me one day he'd been training for 20 years.
Oh, shit.
This dude can do a backflip. You know, like, I used to do a backflip, but I used to have to do like a round off first and then do a backflip. Yo, we're doing a scene one day, and he just does a backflip. With ease, like a fucking gazelle. Like, it's crazy. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Yo, so yeah, he's the real deal,
man. He looks legit in the trailer.
He does most of his own stunts. You know, he actually don't like it when the stuntman has to do his stunts. He's like, and he's actually British.
What?
Yeah, so, I mean, he speaks with the Asian accent.
Sure.
But he's from London. So he's actually Chinese and Irish,
dude. If you need more of a reason, American actors, to step your game up,
no kidding.
I mean, it's like now they're coming over, taking our.
Yeah, they're taking over.
Well, I mean, they're not even taking our jobs. They're taking the jobs of people that came over here to take our jobs.
Yeah, that's true.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he's getting it in.
That's a whole other level.
Dude, that's awesome.
He was like, I want to do my own stunts, man. I just like doing my own stunts. So, I mean, he's a beast, though.
Hey, did you give you any tips when you're about to, like, hold a gun a certain way or do a roundhouse kick?
Nah, I mean, because we leave the martial arts stuff to him, at least his first season.
Yeah.
I do more like the brawling and boxing type fighting and shooting. I murder.
What?
I'm a murderer.
What is that like? Wait, so when you shoot the, I mean, they have, there's stuff that they put on the actors.
Sometimes they do that, and then sometimes I think they do it in post-production. The effects or whatever.
The squibs and stuff.
The squibs. Yeah.
Squibs are the things that blow up, and there's like little blood packet in there, so it looks like
Did you shoot someone with a squib, though?
I murder people every episode.
Holy shit. What is that like, man?
I'm a serial killer.
I'm
always justified. Anytime I shoot anybody on that show, it is definitely justified. My life or somebody's life is in danger.
But then
I'm a legitimate cop.
Okay, cool. Like, you're there as a, like, you play cops and robbers as a kid, like,
right.
And you play war,
Grand
whatever,
Theft Auto,
Grand Theft Auto. Like, the fact that you still get to do that, you're still, there's that still childlike voice in you that's like, holy shit, this is cool.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it's definitely a power thing. Sometimes I fuck with the guest stars if they like playing the bad guy, and I'm like, you won't be coming back because
I'm gonna kill you.
I don't care how good you are in the scene. If you're too good, I'm gonna shoot you before you even get your last line in.
Exactly. So they'd be like, "Oh, well, maybe you don't have to kill me." I said, "No, for sure, my guy kills people. My guy kills people. They got the thing, buddy.
I can't."
Now, how is that being on set? Just from, because we've talked about just the transition too, which you're now going to go through from being like featured a headliner. Like
the first
year I headlined, I told Brad, I was like, "Man, it took me about 6-7 months of doing it to just transition from going like, okay, like taking control of my show and being concerned of things like if the host that they provided was doing 15 up top and he was garbage and he'd been doing it for 2 months and I would, you know, the first handful of months I'd be like, no, I'm just glad to be headlining. This is dope. I don't want to fuck up my relationship with this club, so I'm not going to speak up. But then after a while, you're like, no, this is my show. This reflects on me, so I'm going to say to the host, hey, man, you're only doing 5. Or to the manager, hey, can we find a different host? Because this is my show and it's, so
reflects on you. So.
Yeah. So being on set, like, did it? Was there a point when you kind of like just got more comfortable being like, I'm the lead of a fucking network series?
Well, yeah. And you know what? I actually did that from the pilot. I realized that I am the lead on the show. I'm number one on the call sheet. And what you want to do is you want to create an environment. What I wanted to do was create an environment where everyone wanted to be there. You know, I wanted the crew and the cast to have fun. I wanted them to be happy just to show up to work, you know, because we have to work long hours together. We see each other longer than we see our families. So I wanted to make sure all of that was good.
Yeah.
And so I made sure every day I had a positive attitude. I made sure that I spoke to everybody. And they used to laugh. They was like, Justin is talking to the sound guy. Nobody talks to the sound guys. And I'm like, yeah, man, like that makes a difference.
That guy could fuck up your scene.
He's gonna fuck up my scene with that audio. Exactly.
And no one's gonna blame the sound guy. They're gonna be like, oh man, Justin talks weird. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Like,
exactly.
So, yeah, and that's important to do.
Did somebody tell you to act that way or to act?
Well, I heard a Will Smith interview a long time ago, and I think I just heard how they said that he would even talk to like the background actors. Mm-hmm. And I've done background once. I realized that I would never do it again, but I did it once.
Yeah,
and
it's hard work and it's thankless.
Yeah, it's thankless, right?
Yeah.
And so basically, I just realized, hey man, at the end of the day, I realized two things. You should be a good person just for the sake of being a good person, right? Without wanting anything in return. This is just my personal belief.
Yep.
I feel like you should be a good person in life just for the sake of being a good person. And the second reason why you should be a good person is because, especially in Hollywood, you don't know where somebody's going to be at in their career 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Or 8 years from now, or 10 years from now. And the same person that you shitted on is the same person that now has a TV show. The same person that's now starring in movies. And so now, you're like, man, they won't hire me. Well, you was a fucking asshole to that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't a big deal, but you like, you know, they I don't know, man, you cut in line of them and something, and they excuse me, and you go, shut up.
Right.
Fuck off, man. Like, I got to do this. Like, something little, and so I just practice the habit of, like, being selfless and being generous and being sweet and talking to everybody and, like, getting the habit of because also, I'm sure that's how I am, like, when I do weekends. I get to know Brad the same way. Get to know the staff because it makes me more comfortable to do my job when I feel like, oh, cool, I have some rapport with them. They're going to do their job great because they're going to want me to do well the same way I want them to do well.
Yeah, if you're an asshole to the wait staff, they're not going to want to jump on a heckler for you or escort them out or keep quiet or
recommend you
like
to whatever, just talk about. Yeah. I mean, it's just it all pays off. Was there That's funny you say, talking to the sound guy, people were like, that's so crazy. Was there right. was there any sort of, though, like, that's, I mean, insane. From Ratner or even John Fu or somebody that, like, just, or I guess our actor that came on that was, like, gave you some, like, I don't know, Hollywood advice had been around, like?
Well, Brett Ratner, he told me, well, he said the advice he gave Chris was to talk fast. He said he told him to talk fast because he realized the audience would just be more engaged at, like, someone talking fast than if they was, like, talking slow. Now, I naturally talk fast anyways.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, that was something. But other than that, you know, I think everybody was just like, oh, enjoy the moment, you know, and just have fun. Because when you're working those amount of hours and you're doing all that shit, you could kind of get jaded, you know. And it's kind of like by episode 9, you're like, fuck this. Fuck all of this shit.
Yeah, man.
Fuck all this money. Fuck this. Fuck. And so, you know, I always made sure to remind myself, like, this is literally what I prayed for. You know what I'm saying? Like, I literally got down on my knees, prayed to God that I would be the star of a television show.
Wow.
You have this. And I'm talking about, I did that. I've done it for a while. But I literally did that a week before I had my audition.
Wow.
It's crazy. And so it's like when you do that and you have those moments, it's like, be thankful you're acting. Shut the fuck up. Do your job. You know, and be thankful that you're doing
this. And then, I mean, you put that out and then you get good things back. Like, I saw you tweeted that you saw your that when your daughter saw the preview.
Yeah.
Like, she got all happy and
that's
like
crazy, man.
And like,
I damn near want to cry right now.
Yeah, like how does that make you feel when your kid who you're all I feel I'm not a parent, but I feel like if you're a parent, you're always trying to impress your kids, make sure your kids look up to you, and
like a good example.
Yeah. And now how does it make you feel like your daughter sees you on your show on TV?
It's
and
crazy,
and just goes, I want to see that now.
It's that was the best feeling. My daughter saw my Super Bowl spot basically. Yeah. And like she got excited. She's like, that's daddy.
How old is she?
She's 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like, that's daddy. She'll be 3 in April. She's like, that's daddy. And she calls me Super Daddy anytime she sees me on a screen.
Geez.
So she'd be like, Super Daddy. And she was laughing. And man, nothing. I'm talking about, I always tell people, she is my greatest accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, nothing I will ever achieve will be greater than having my daughter.
I mean, it's like daughter. I mean, close second has got to be jerking off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Under the table.
Yeah,
like that's close.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I mean, and she's got to know that.
And she respects that.
You know,
she understands.
You know, if she gets older, if she fucks up too much, jerking off under the table might pass her up.
Pass her. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So,
then the next time I'm gonna jerk off on top of the table. You know,
eat your cereal around that shit. So 2.5 years ago. So she's. So, did having her up your game as far as your aggressiveness to wanting to plant your seed in this business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, having a child, it's like you have somebody to provide for. You have somebody to look for, look out for. So, it's like, yeah, it's like step your game up because it's not just about me or my lady. It's about this person that didn't ask to be here. So,
yeah,
you know.
And what's your name?
Jai.
That's a great
there
name.
You go. Yeah. There you go. Well, hey, man, you're fucking killing it. And
yeah,
now you're
super
YouTube star, stand-up and TV. Like, I love the fact you're going into all these avenues and you're excelling in all these avenues. And you have a great work ethic. And I love when good things happen to people that have a great work ethic.
Yeah, hey, man. I mean, the first few times that we met at the Ha, and then, like, what's crazy is, like, every time I've seen him, we talk, like, we, you know, this is the longest conversation we've probably had.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
Like, the conversations were long enough, and, like, there was a good enough, like, just genuine rapport and, like, what's up, and recognizing the other person, like, getting after it. And so, man, I was so pumped when I saw you got this show.
Thanks, man.
And to hear how hard you've been crushing it and working for it, it's just the beginning. Rush Hour, CBS Thursdays,
March
31st, the premiere, 10 p.m. And watch that. JustinHires.com for all your stand-up dates.
Yeah.
Because you'll probably be hitting the road.
Yeah, I'm about to hit the road tough starting in April. So I'm doing Denver and I'm doing Baltimore. So go to JustinHires.com. Like Tires, but with an H, Hires. And so, all my social media is Justin Hires too.
Yeah, so perfect. Ladies, what we're trying to say is March 31st, he becomes a major star. So you kind of want to be like, you know how you wish you had IBM stock, like that, like back when it started.
Yeah.
Be nice to this guy now.
Yeah, so that you can get seats to a live taping of
That's My Nigga. Instead, I think we done changed the title like three. But as long as it ends with nigga, it's still funny. It's like, that's my nigga. Here go my nigga. It's like, we've had like four titles in this fucking show. But hey, man, you know. Show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamy Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.